This TED Talk features entrepreneur Tasos Frantzolas, recorded live at TEDx Athens 2016.
I want to start by doing an experiment. I'm going to play three videos of a rainy day, but I've replaced the audio of one of the videos, and instead of the sound of rain, I've added the sound of bacon frying. So I want you to think carefully which one the clip with the bacon is. All right. So actually, I lied. They're all bacon. All right. My point here isn't really to make you hungry every time you see a rainy scene, but it's to show that our brains are conditioned to embrace the lies. We're not looking for accuracy. So, on the subject of deception, I wanted to quote one of my favorite authors. In The Decay of the Art of Lying, Oscar Wilde establishes the idea that all bad art comes from copying nature and being realistic, and all great art comes from lying and deceiving and telling beautiful, untrue things. So, when you're watching a movie and a phone rings, it's not actually ringing. It's been added later in post-production in a studio. All of the sounds you hear are fake. Everything apart from the dialogue is fake. When you watch a movie and you see a bird flapping its wings, they haven't really recorded the bird. It sounds a lot more realistic if you record a sheet or shaking kitchen gloves. The burning of a cigarette up close, it actually sounds a lot more authentic if you take a small saran wrap ball and release it. Punches. Oops. Let me play that again. That's often done by sticking a knife in vegetables, usually cabbage. The next one, it's breaking bones. Well, no one was really harmed. It's actually breaking celery or frozen lettuce. Yeah. Making the right sounds is not always as easy as a trip to the supermarket and going to the vegetable section. But it's often a lot more complicated than that. So let's reverse engineer together the creation of a sound effect. One of my favorite stories comes from Frank Serafini. He's a contributor to our library and a great sound designer for Tron and Star Trek and others. He was part of the Paramount team that won the Oscar for Best Sound for The Hunt for Red October. So in this Cold War classic in the 90s, they were asked to produce the sound of the propeller of the submarine. So they had a small problem. They couldn't really find a submarine in West Hollywood. So basically, what they did is they went to a friend's swimming pool, and Frank performed a cannonball, or boba. They placed an underwater mic and an overhead mic outside the swimming pool. So here's what the underwater mic sounds like. Adding the overhead mic, it sounded a bit like this. So now they took the sound and pitched it one octave down, sort of like slowing down a record. And then they removed a lot of the high frequencies and pitched it down another octave. And then they added a little bit of a splash from the overhead microphone. And by looping and repeating that sound, they got this. So, you know, creativity and technology put together in order to create the illusion that we're inside the submarine. But once you've created your sounds and you've synced them to the image, you want those sounds to live in the world of the story. And one of the best ways to do that is to add reverb. So this is the first audio tool I want to talk about. Reverberation, or reverb, is the persistence of the sound after the original sound has ended. So it's sort of like all the reflections from the materials, the objects, and the walls around the sound. Take, for example, the sound of a gunshot, which the original sound is less than half a second long. By adding reverb, we can make it sound like it was recorded inside a bathroom, or like it was recorded inside a chapel or a church, or in a canyon. So reverb gives us a lot of information about the space between the listener and the original sound source. If the sound is the taste, then reverb is sort of like the smell of the sound. But reverb can do a lot more. Listening to a sound with a lot less reverberation than the on-screen action is going to immediately signify to us that we're listening to a commentator, to an objective narrator that's not participating in the on-screen action. Also, emotionally intimate moments in cinema are often heard with zero reverb, because that's how it would sound if someone was speaking inside our ear. On the completely other side, adding a lot of reverb to a voice is going to make us think that we're listening to a flashback, or perhaps that we're inside the head of a character, or that we're listening to the voice of God, or even more powerful in film, Morgan Freeman. You know, so, but what are some other tools or hacks that sound designers use? Well, here's a really big one. It's silence. A few moments of silence is going to make us pay attention. And in the Western world, we're not really used to verbal silence, as they're considered awkward or rude. So silence preceding verbal communication can create a lot of tension. But imagine a really big sort of Hollywood movie where it's full of explosions and automatic guns. Loud stops being loud anymore after a while. So in a yin-yang way, silence needs loudness and loudness needs silence for either of them to have any effect. But what does silence mean? Well, it depends how it's used in each film. Silence can place us inside the head of a character or provoke thought. We often relate silences with contemplation, meditation, being deep in thought. But apart from having one meaning, silence becomes a blank canvas upon which the viewer is invited to paint their own thoughts. But I wanted to make it clear, there is no such thing as silence. And I know this sounds like the most pretentious TED Talk statement ever, but even if you were to enter a room with zero reverberation and zero external sounds, you would still be able to hear the pumping of your own blood. And in cinema, traditionally, there was never a silent moment because of the sound of the projector. And even in today's Dolby world, there's not really any moment of silence if you listen around you. There's always some sort of noise. Now, since there's no such thing as silence, what do filmmakers and sound designers use? Well, as a synonym, they often use ambiences. Ambiences are the unique background sounds that are specific to each location. Each location has a unique sound, and each room has a unique sound, which is called room tone. So here's a recording of a market in Morocco. And here's a recording of Times Square in New York. Room tone is the addition of all the noises inside the room, the ventilation, the heating, the fridge. So here's a recording of my apartment in Brooklyn. Ambiences work in a most primal way. They can speak directly to our brain subconsciously. So birds chirping outside your window may indicate normality, perhaps because as a species, we've been used to that sound every morning for millions of years. On the other hand, industrial sounds have been introduced to us a little more recently. Even though I really like them personally, they have been used by one of my heroes, David Lynch, and his sound designer, Alan Splitt. Industrial sounds often carry negative connotations. Now, sound effects can tap into our emotional memory. Occasionally, they can be so significant that they become a character in a movie. The sound of thunder may indicate divine intervention or anger. Church bells can remind us of the passing of time or perhaps our own mortality. And breaking of glass can indicate the end of a relationship or a friendship. Now, scientists believe that dissonant sounds, for example, brass or wind instruments played very loud, may remind us of animal howls in nature and therefore create a sense of irritation or fear. So now, we've spoken about on-screen sounds, but occasionally, the source of a sound cannot be seen. That's what we call off-screen sounds, or acousmatic. Acousmatic sounds, well, the term acousmatic comes from Pythagoras in ancient Greece, who used to teach behind a veil or curtain for years, not revealing himself to his disciples. I think the mathematician and philosopher thought that in that way, his students might focus more on the voice and his words and its meaning rather than of the visual of him speaking. So sort of like the Wizard of Oz or 1984's Big Brother, separating the voice from its source, separating cause and effect, sort of creates a sense of ubiquity or panopticism and therefore authority. There's a strong tradition of acousmatic sound. Nuns in monasteries in Rome and Venice used to sing in rooms up in galleries close to the ceiling, creating the illusion that we're listening to angels up in the sky. Richard Wagner famously created the hidden orchestra that was placed in a pit between the stage and the audience. And one of my heroes, Aphex Twin, famously hid in dark corners of clubs. So I think what all these masters knew is that by hiding the source, you create a sense of mystery. This has been seen in cinema over and over with Hitchcock and Ridley Scott and Alien. Hearing a sound without knowing its source is going to create some sort of tension. Also, it can minimize certain visual restrictions that directors have and can show something that wasn't there during filming. And if all this sounds a little theoretical, I wanted to play a little video. What I'm sort of trying to demonstrate with these tools is that sound is a language. It can trick us by transporting us geographically. It can change the mood. It can set the pace. It can make us laugh or it can make us scared. And on a personal level, I fell in love with that language a few years ago and somehow managed to make it into some sort of profession. And I think with our work through the sound library, we're trying to kind of expand the vocabulary of that language. And in that way, we want to offer the right tools to sound designers, filmmakers, video game and app designers, to keep telling even better stories and creating even more beautiful lives. So thanks for listening.
For more TED Talks, go to TED.com.